Larry Mueller here. Thanks for spending some of your day with us on the Ideas Network. We're talking now about a book of poetry about life in the rural Midwest. Its title is Ancestral, and here with us is the author, Daniel Smith. Dan Smith is a poet, an essayist, a public speaker, agribusiness executive, ran his family's dairy farm in northwestern Illinois for three decades, 30 years, and now he serves as president and CEO of Cooperative Network and as a director within the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. So as we talk with Dan, I hope you'll join in. Did you grow up on a farm? What made you decide to stay or perhaps leave? How did farming change you or farm life change you as a person? You're invited to join in the conversation. I hope you do. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Dan Smith, welcome. Good to have you with us today.
Thank you, Larry. Great to be here.
Tell you what, I really enjoyed going through your book. I was grew up on a farm and spent a lot of time around that farm, of course, but farmers in general, farm families in general, and your poetry really strikes home in a lot of ways. Some of the things in there didn't happen to me. A lot of the good things did. We were lucky. We didn't have quite as much hardship as some of the other people that I knew quite well, and those struck home very much for me. And so, of course, farming is central to Ancestral. What's your personal relationship to farming right now? I think it's part of your work with the Department of Ag and with the Cooperative Network.
It is, really. Cooperative Network works with cooperatives from the agricultural sector across Wisconsin and Minnesota. So we're constantly engaged on everything from the supply side to the producer side of agriculture. As a director at the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, I also work with all the farm programs in the state. And after leaving farming, Larry, I had spent several years as a farm crisis counselor, where I got to meet farmers around the state and talk to their families through the Wisconsin Farm Center. And some of those stories really served as the inspiration for a few of the poems in the book.
I bet they did. I had another friend, Dick Rodefeld, who had a very similar job to yours. I interviewed him about it on the show. He was also a personal friend. Actually lived with him and his family for a couple of years.
Wonderful.
I was sure that some of your poems had a relationship back to that position with the Department of Ag. And several of the poems in the collection draw from your childhood. I think it'd be fun to share some of the poems, and we'll try and do that kind of throughout the show, but maybe there's one that was titled Some Nights My Father. Can you read that one for us?
Of course, my pleasure. Some nights my father. Some nights my father would walk me out into the darkness between the house and barn to show me Cassiopeia, the Big Dipper, and the North Star. These things a child must know, so that one day, should the world veer suddenly off course, he can walk with his child across the open into the darkness and point to what is constant, illuminating, and true.
Yeah, that's a really nice poem. How did your father influence your life?
Tremendously. I obviously grew up on the family dairy farm. My father was the second generation. I was the third to run the farm. You know, Larry, you're indoctrinated and you fall in love with farming at a very, very early age. And I think later in life, when you have to make some tough decisions about changing your life, that is why it is so difficult for not only myself, but for all people who end up moving on from a family farm. So in this poem, I was thinking about how secure growing up on a family farm made me, and I think makes a lot of people feel. It's like your whole world, and it's so safe, and your parents are right there outside the house working. And my father would take me out and point out the stars to me and teach me these things. And you know, Larry, we've heard so much in the last couple years about what is truth and what isn't, what is a lie and what is fabrication and those things. And I just wanted to go back to my roots and talk about something that should has guided mankind for centuries.
Yeah.
And that's the stars. And hopefully we never start arguing about whether they are real or not.
Well, let's hope not. Well, Barbara in Grand Marsh has a comment for us. Let's go there. Barbara, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was always with my grandparents in the Victory Garden in Illinois, which was kind of farming. And then I moved to Wisconsin, and I met up with some friends who had a farm. And they had to use the outhouse all the time. Now, the unique part of this is that when they stopped farming, I got the outhouse on my property. But this is the unique thing. It's one of the few that's a three-holer.
Wow.
And when their kids went, it was dark, so all three of them had to go at the same time, and that's why they always had the three-holer, and it sits proudly on my property now. Not in use, but it's still there.
Oh, Barbara, thanks for calling. Comment on that one, Dan.
That shows how close everybody had to be on the family farm, that's for sure.
And it's one of those things, that one of those memories. Mm-hmm. You think about memories from the farm. Some of them are kind of fun and funny when you look back at them. Some of them aren't maybe as happy as that one was. Barbara, thanks a lot. I appreciate that call. And you can join in, too, 800-642-1234. Give a call. You attended UW-Madison. Actually took a course from me.
Yes, I did.
A long time ago. But that's also where you met your wife, Cheryl. Mm-hmm. What made you decide to go back to the farm?
Just the opportunity to be that close to nature, to live that type of a lifestyle, to raise our family on the family farm. And I think also the commitment to keep it going, to do the work that you had seen your grandfather and your father do, and to want to participate, to improve, to produce food. As I said, I fell in love with farming at a very early age. I loved it all the time that we did farm. And I think it gave us a tremendous opportunity for not only our lifestyle, but to raise our children as well, and to really be anchored into what I would consider the real work of the world.
I'm sure that experience farming for 30 years had an influence on you as a poet.
Very much so. I think I was very fortunate to have that ground base of subject matter that meant so much to me. And one of the inspirations, Larry, for writing this and pulling this collection together was I know that it's not exclusive to me. I know there are thousands of people who experience some type of farm life, whether it's directly by growing up on a farm or they visited their grandparents' farm or something. And as I read this book around the state, I have so many people that come up and talk about how it meant so much to them to relive those memories because they're so strong in our heritage, in our culture.
Yeah. You want to share a poem from that period of your life? There, you had several I can think of. Faith, farm work, another one, chasing chores. Mm-hmm. You want to pick one of those?
I think I'll read Cultivating, if that's okay.
Okay.
Because Cultivating really talks about what I said before about how we get indoctrinated and the farm becomes your whole world. And as you get involved in running the farm yourself. You're not a child anymore. You're on the farm. I think it's very easy to think that the present is always going to be, that you'll never have to make difficult choices. You won't have to move on physically, emotionally, financial changes won't impact you. And this is a poem about when I lived in that world, secure on the farm, and perhaps didn't spend enough time looking ahead to my future. And it's called Cultivating. Day after day, year in and year out, I never left my father's farm. Wore down dirt, a straight path from house to barn. Opened each day with pocket knife and pliers, the ways my father taught me. Out on the blacktop, men raced breakneck speed to jobs in town, to worlds apart from what could be measured, from what could be held close. While I steered the old red tractor, carefully cultivating my narrow rows, two hands on the wheel, eyes tucked back beneath my wide-brimmed hat, so not to rise up, look ahead, and veer off course into today.
I like that. It reminded me of my first time on driving the tractor disking. And I got to the end of the field, and I didn't know any better, and I backed up a little bit. And then I just proceeded down the rows, and my dad came out and said, "Hey, you goofed up the disc when you backed it up. You're not disking anything." And it was my very first time working in the field where I actually got to drive the tractor. And I wasn't very successful, at least in the beginning.
That's a wonderful memory.
Dan Smith, our guest today. His book, a book of poetry about farm life. It's titled Ancestral. And he'll be with us right up until 12:30 today. We'll take a look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And you can join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about a poetry that draws on memories and real hardships and some joys of the farm and rural life with our guest, Dan Smith. Daniel is a poet, an essayist, public speaker, agribusiness executive. He's the author of a collection of poems, and the title of the book is Ancestral. So, what are your memories of living on or visiting a farm? What beauty do you see in farm work? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Dan, why'd you call your book Ancestral?
I wanted to draw attention to the ancestral passage of time on several different fronts. Obviously, the ancestral family home where I was raised with my parents and my seven siblings on the family farm, but also the ancestral land. We were a three-generation dairy farm at one time. And then finally, the ancestral work. You just mentioned it, Larry, in your last statement there. The repetition over the years, the changing cycle of the season, the good years and the bad years, that all pull together into an ancestral framework that is the family home, the family business, the family way of life, and that really forms your ancestral values that you hope, whether you're on the farm or not, you will pass down to future generations.
Yeah. And there's been so much change. You think back probably to maybe when you started, just looking at the number of farms and the changing farm landscape in the 30 years that you were on the farm were huge.
Just unbelievable change while we were there, unbelievable change since we quit farming in 2008. You know, Larry, the year that Cheryl and I started farming in Illinois, Wisconsin had 47,700 licensed dairy farms. And today we have about 6,300. So yeah. When I look at Ancestral, I really looked at that as the story of thousands of farm families, not just mine.
Yeah. Richard in Stoughton, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I realized that when I was out cultivating one day on my own farm, that farming is nothing but an interesting collection of boring jobs. That included milking cows and cultivating corn and doing all that, raking hay. But that was my saying that I coined myself while I was cultivating one day.
Richard, thanks. Comment, Dan?
I think I haven't heard that before, Richard, and that is really excellent. I'll have to remember that.
You do have a lot of time to think.
Mm-hmm.
Cultivating or whatever the job, sometimes your mind is free to roam quite a bit.
Exactly, yeah. And you spend a lot of time alone, as Richard said.
Yeah, absolutely. Listener from Stoughton up next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you for putting this book together, for writing this book. I want to ask you about some of the smells or the aromas that only those who are on farms get to enjoy. And, you know, some of them you forget about. I'm a farmer myself, and I only remember them when they come around, maybe once a year. But could you talk about some of the favorite smells in the air that, you know, you remember that are memorable to you?
Sure.
Yeah. Great question.
Yeah. I think that's part of the falling in love at an early age is just the senses that farming awakens in a child, you know, not only visual ones, but the smell and the sounds of things. You know, you are living and working in a very organic environment. Everything is right outside the door, so you're not removed from the farm until you have to go away to school for a bit. But that farm is always right outside the door. And those changes of smells, they change with what work you're doing, what the season is like, what the weather is like that particular year. And it really draws you into it, and you carry it with you a long ways.
I was thinking about that question. You know, I think about newly mown hay,
mm-hmm.
or on the farm after a rain.
Yes,
is another one.
Yeah,
that comes to mind. Or up in the haymow.
Mm-hmm.
Or shoveling silage out of the silo, you know, that smell of silage.
Right.
I mean, I'll never forget that.
Yeah. It awakens a lot of emotions mm-hmm. that you become attached to over time.
Or tobacco. Mm-hmm. We did a little tobacco farming too. So the smell of tobacco plants and newly cut, and the smell when I was up in the hayloft, or up in the... in the tobacco shed, straddling a couple of poles and grabbing laths of tobacco as it came up.
Yeah.
Those smells, just they never, you know, right away.
Yeah, and if you smelled it today, it would take you right back to that spot and time in your life.
Yeah, I can imagine. And the other one that I didn't like so well was milking cows in the morning, and if it got late, and not being able to take a shower before you went to the went to school.
Yeah. I'm sure that's a shared memory as well.
Oh, thanks so much. I enjoyed that question. Oh, I enjoy all of them. Let's go to Connie in Portage. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, or after. Well, yeah, it is still afternoon, is it? But anyway, I'm 83, and I can remember on the farm in Darlington, we had two horses, Queenie and Major, and the collar that went around their neck, that leather, that smell from the horse, and I was 7 when we left the farm, but I can still remember that smell of that leather.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I, I don't know what's so different about it, but it's just, and it wasn't a horrible, a bad, an odor. It was more like I can remember it as a good smell.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and those smells are hard to recapture in a lot of today's world.
Yeah, for sure. Connie, thanks very much for calling and sharing that. I appreciate it very much. Let's see. There was a poem that you haven't read yet that I was hoping you would. You and Cheryl decided to leave the farm in 2008, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. and the decisions that families have to make when they sell their farms is really, really hard. Talk about some of that.
Yes. Well, we had been on the farm, farming it for 30 years, and I had lived on the farm for 55. And I was 55 years old at that time. We were milking 100 cows. Our sons were raised and all graduated from the University of Wisconsin-Madison and moved on into their careers. We were at a position that so many of those thousands of farms that have exited since I began my career face at some point. It was going to take a tremendous amount of reinvestment in the farm to keep it modernized. We were wearing down physically, emotionally. We were not in dire straits financially, but it was a constant battle not to become financially at risk. And we decided in our mid-50s that we would make a big change. And ancestral also means the interruption of the ancestral process, the giving up the ancestral land and moving someplace and starting a life over. And I think that process of going through that, which was an extremely difficult process that took a lot of planning over several years to do this, really helped me as I began as a crisis counselor to farm families facing similar decisions across the state, because there's no easy way to do it. And you have to separate emotional decisions from business decisions. We felt that at that time, and relocating to the Madison area would give us the best chance to start second careers at when we could no longer do what we really loved on the farm. And I think it's having that experience gave me credibility with working with farmers around the state who say to me, I've heard many times, I've always been a farmer, it's the only thing I can do. I honor that, but I think if you've been a farmer, you can do most anything.
Yeah, yeah. And separating that emotional and financial part, I mean, that is the hardest.
It very much is. And you always want to be in control of your decisions, not have your circumstances controlling you.
Yeah. Well, that poem, there's a poem you have called Anvil. Could you read that for us?
Sure. I wrote this poem. This is the first poem I wrote after we left the farm. And I wrote it right after we settled into our new home in Iowa County here west of Madison. And of course, three generations on the farm, when you move, you have a lot of stuff that you simply can't leave behind. Some of it is emotional, some of it is physical. And the best example of a physical item that I brought with me from the farm, and I brought quite a bit of stuff with me, was the anvil that had been on the workbench on the family farm for as long as I could remember. So it was probably there when my grandfather had the farm. And I'll read it now. It's called Anvil. I've hauled my father's anvil due north, up out of the Black Illinois farm ground. He and I together worked decades our home. Set down 60 pounds onto the floor of this old barn, new only to me. All around, our bewildered tools hang in the strange light of the cracked window pane, where I stand looking out over land not yet home. It is growing late on a late winter's day. At my feet, my father's anvil, his striking song of steel on steel, still hammering home.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be a difficult thing to part with. I mean, that's something that's so enduring. Mm-hmm. It's going to be there long, long after we are gone. That anvil's hopefully still going to be there for somebody.
Yeah, and it, you know, all the times I spent as a child watching my dad flatten metal or sharpen sickle sections or something by using that anvil, those are the things you carry with you and you just find impossible to set down.
Yeah, for sure. Well, there's a theme in your poem, in your poetry, in the connection between humans and the earth. I think you may have touched on that in one of your first poems that you read. But why do you think people are so connected to nature?
Well, I think as you know, obviously that's where we get our substance from, growing the food, very essential, very important business. That takes a tremendous amount of experience and aptitude over the years. The blending of machines, livestock, the ground, weather patterns, all of those things coming together to form what is an extremely invigorating environment that people are willing to dedicate their life to. Work 7 days a week, 14 hours a day to maintain that. And I saw that over and over again in my crisis work with farmers, is no matter how difficult the situation, they may be in physical pain from the wearing down. There may be family strife. They may have emotional issues, and that many of them had financial issues. I never really heard a farmer speak badly of his life. They always said, I want to keep doing this. I need to, how can I keep going? And that's really a testimony to how they feel, how farmers feel about their calling. And it really is a calling.
I was thinking back to a time we had a little fundraising event at my home at the time, which was on Lake Monona. And people could, I forget what we had a fee for it. People could come and have dinner with us on the lake and boat rides and things of that nature. And I had a woman call me, and she says, I'm from, my husband and I have farmed for 30 years, and I'm not telling him, I'm calling you. We have never had a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And this dinner will be our vacation.
Wow.
I didn't want to tell him because he'd say no.
I believe that. All right.
And they came to that dinner, and I think the person who had the most fun and enjoyed it the most was that husband.
I imagine. Yes.
And I've thought about that couple. They were such nice people, and I thought about them many times, and I thought, gosh, I hope they've had a chance to do more than come and have dinner with me and other people who listen to public radio.
Right.
It was, but that's, you know, that's kind of, as you were just saying, that's what brought it to my mind when you were talking about the fact that farmers, it's 7 days a week, 14 hours at least a day, and especially in the summertime and so forth. But they wouldn't have it any other way.
Right.
Have you got a favorite poem within the book itself?
Maybe I'll read A Farmer Dies in Springtime. And I think the reason this is so important to me is, you know, when Cheryl and I left the family farm in Illinois, as I said, we left a lot behind. You know, the ancestral land, the work we had done for 30 years, the home that we raised our children in. And it was a risk. Were we going to be able to fall in love with another place? And I often told farmers in my crisis work that you can love more than one place in your life. When they would say that they could not leave the farm. It certainly helps if you find a second life, a second career, a second home that you fall in love with as well. And one of the reasons that we were able to do that is because we were welcomed into a community in Iowa County of farmers and neighbors who, once they got over the Illinois license plates and realized we were Packer fans, not Bear fans, we were welcomed in with open arms. And one of those community members passed away shortly after we moved in, but a man that we had great respect for and was a wonderful farmer and a wonderful friend. And I wrote this poem for him, and I think what it shows is the importance of a community in Wisconsin agriculture, how we need to work together, how the farmers had shared so much. And it's called A Farmer Dies in Springtime. Home from the hospital to a bed with a view of the fields. Tended by hospice, who arrive morning and night like a hired man come to chore. Neighbors stop by, sit bedside, stare into their hands, red and cracked from winter. They recall the year of the early frost, flood, or big drought. They avoid talk of the plowing or planting, of the futures for cattle or corn. The tractor, disc, and planter stay locked in the shed with seed bought months ago when the new catalogs arrived, glossy with promise and primed for a year that would not be.
I get a big lump in my throat when I read that one. And that pictures, I was involved in a situation like that myself once, and I could really picture exactly what you were writing about in that poem. Did you write poetry as a kid or?
Pretty early in high school. And in fact, the oldest poem in this book, Larry, is 45 years old, and that's Between Generations. And I wrote that in high school. And then I wrote these poems over the course of my life. And the newest poem was a poem called Two, and that was written just a couple weeks before the manuscript went to press.
Wow. And how's the book going?
It's going very well. I think it has touched a nerve in the farming community, not only with those presently farming, but as I said before, those who have a history of visiting a farm or just an appreciation of what farming is like. I think it's grounded in the Midwest enough that people can understand the poems. I've had people tell me that they are little stories as much as they are poems, and I would agree with that. I was able to use a lot of the experience, well, several experiences. Number one, obviously growing up on the farm. Two, operating the farm myself for 30 years. Three, making the transition off the farm, and there are several poems in here about that transition. And then on fifth would be really the work I did as a crisis counselor, because you can hear those people's voice in here. And I think finally, there are some poems in here that maybe we've kind of turned the corner and I'm looking more ahead than past. Yeah. And I'm looking more at the general world that we are all living in today, the uncertainty of that world and what is beautiful in it and what we still need to work on.
And how do people get copies?
They can call or go on directly to the publisher, Waters Edge Press in Sheboygan. So go to watersedgepress.com. Obviously, your local bookstore either has the book or can get the book for you. And, of course, we can always resort to Amazon.
Okay. On that note, Daniel, it has been a great pleasure. I've really enjoyed the book, and I appreciate you taking time to be with us today.
Thank you, Larry.
Daniel Smith, his book is titled Ancestral, wonderful book of poetry about farms and farm life and living. And I thank you all for listening, and I hope you'll stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.